Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today is World Wildlife Day, and Stephanie Erny is with us. She joins us the first Tuesday of each month with insight on things that we all should be thinking about but oftentimes overlook. She's a speaker, explorer, and wildlife presenter, and she's the founder of the Creative Animal Foundation. She's super fun to follow on social media, by the way, and she's with us this month to talk about the Penguin Conservation Project and this film, Saving Penguins. Stephanie, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
So let's talk African penguins, because this is a heartbreaking story and an inspiring story, but there's so much here to unpack. So for folks who haven't been with us, as we've talked about your work with African penguins before, let's do a little recap of the history here of what happened to their habitat, which is sort of a surprising kind of habitat.
Okay, so let me first take you to South Africa, so the southern tip of the continent of Africa. In this location, you have a species of warm weather penguin called the African penguin. It's had other names as well, but we're sticking to African penguin. Right. Now, first of all, you might be surprised that there's a penguin in a warm weather climate. We're always shown cold weather penguins because, for the most part, they're a lot more fun. I think people think they're a lot more fun to film because of the dramatic location, their ecosystem in the southern hemisphere in Antarctica. But there are a lot of warm weather penguins that live off the coast of South America, Africa, Australia, New Zealand. So we're focusing on the ones that are on the tip of South Africa and on islands off of the coast of South Africa. Now, a couple of years ago, I was at a conference and an ornithologist, a bird expert, came up to me and said, "Stephanie, I love your work, getting, messages out there. Can you help me share the story of the African penguin by coming to Africa in a couple months with me and just doing some social media?" Well, of course, after talking to a few other colleagues, that wasn't good enough. We're like, "No, we need to help you. I didn't even know that African penguins were struggling. I did not know that they were down by 99%. So we're now down to the last 1% of the population, which is about 50,000 African penguins, which might sound like, "Whoa, Steph, that's still a lot." But honestly, compared to where it used to be in the millions, 50,000 is dramatically decreased and is almost to the point to where they're going to become functionally extinct in the wild, which means that we can't do anything anymore. We can't turn back. They're done. So now we have a chance to do something for them.
Right. Something really dramatic happened to make those numbers drop. Tell us about the burrows.
Absolutely. Okay. So about 150 years ago to 100 years ago, all the way actually into the early 1900s, we had ships that were going through and passing the islands. And when they would pop on these islands, genuinely, they would probably go on the islands and try to get eggs or other seabirds like penguins that live on the island for food. But then they discovered that they were walking along several feet of guano. And they're like, "Well, what could we do with all this guano?" And so they shoveled it up and looked into it and found out that it was an excellent fertilizer. So they started shoveling it up and sending it to farmers on the mainland of South Africa, and their food was growing dramatically quicker and was healthier and bigger. So obviously that is a huge product that could be sold to make a lot of money. So the guano war started. People from all over the world were coming in to try to get their guano. Now, when guano hardens over time, it's like cement. It's really hard to get. But they persisted, and eventually after 100 years, they took all the guano off the island, which was up to, it was well over 5 feet thick. It was actually 5 meters thick, excuse me. So there was a lot on that island. Now, why is this a problem? Because these warm weather penguins tend to burrow into the earth to protect themselves from predators and the sun, and while they're raising their eggs and their chicks. Now, if they don't have any earth to burrow in, then they use their guano because the guano gets hardened. And so they would use their really strong feet and claws to dig in and burrow. And then they would lay their eggs, about up to 2 per breeding season, in that burrow. Well, when we stole their guano, they had nothing to burrow in because on these islands, it is right at the water level and it is rocky and sandy and the water comes all the way up to the surface there. So they cannot burrow down into that. So for the last 100, 150 years, These penguins have been nesting above ground, exposed to extreme heat, especially in the summer, and exposed to predators like these ginormous kelp gulls that are just waiting for one of the penguins to move so that they can coerce them off the nest to eat one of their eggs. So this has dramatically decreased their population. But and there's also other things, Lori.
And I watched the Saving Penguins, a short film, and I shared it on my Facebook page, and you can go to Saving Penguins, the website as well. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But you can really tell, Stephanie, the heat stress that these, I mean, you look at them and they're panting, you can tell this kind of stress and the decision that they have to make about staying on the nest and cooking or abandoning their eggs to possible predators. There's a whole lot happening. And it's painful to watch.
It is. And we tried when my husband and I made this film with Lori Holloway and Kevin Graham. We wanted to convey that stress with everybody. That imagine every single day while you're doing your thing, these penguins are trying desperately to lay eggs to create the next generation, but they're cooking. They are seriously overheating. They have two or three layers of feathers on their body, which keep them nice and warm in the cold South African waters while they're fishing in the deep water for their food. But when they come to the surface, they have like a black coat on and the sun is beaming down on them. And once it hits 95 degrees Fahrenheit, they start feeling like, wow, I might have a heat stroke. And they have to make a choice. Do I die of heat stroke on my egg? Or do I get up and go to the cold water, exposing my chicks that I've worked really hard for to predators like kelp gulls? And on the mainland, there's other predators as well. But I'm really concerned about these ones that are on the islands.
Right.
And we really have to consider, too, that there's other things that these penguins have had to deal with. We have also over-harvested their eggs, which is illegal now. But back in the day, after the guano was gone, they needed something. So they started harvesting the eggs. Then we started overfishing all of their prey, their fish around the island. So then humans turned it into a marine protected area, but it's not managed very well. So they're running out of food. Then this is also a big path for transporting oil. So there's oil spills all the time. And now we see that there's plastic pollution everywhere. And then, of course, climate change. So we're just kind of punching them. And they're having a really, really hard time. And when you sit on that island and you look at them, and you're right, they're panting like dogs. It is really just a slap in the face to go, wow, look at the impact humans have when we make unsustainable choices. And for penguins that live off of islands, if you don't see it, you don't know.
Right.
But I'm here to tell you, it's happening right now, every single day.
There's a beautiful moment in this film where, you have visited, and we can talk a little bit about building artificial nests and the efforts that really need to continue to do that to save or to help the penguins and possibly save the population. But there's this moment that I want to talk to you about in the film that you're flying over, and looking down on this this continent and this ocean and this island, and you're seeing it in this different, we're seeing it with you in this different way than humans have seen this landscape for centuries. And I wonder if you could just talk about, because you're going to try to help and undo the damage that humans have done, really against some pretty enormous odds. But you're looking at the landscape and the ecosystem in a whole new way. And that seems to translate to the grasslands of the Great Plains and the rivers that flow through, our cities here in South Dakota. It's universal with how do we look at the landscape and the inhabitants of it in a way that is about more than just extracting resources.
Exactly. So that is a huge learning lesson. And when we look here on this little island, we see the enormous implications that happened from completely drastically changing the landscape there by stealing the guano that was on the island. And now we're seeing the consequences from that. And obviously, yes, this is, no matter what ecosystem you look at, there is something that we took too much. We got greedy and we took too much and we didn't know or we didn't care of the consequences that came from that and how, of course, it could impact us and our food intake as well. And so for me, my biggest thing is, yeah, we could all sit here and look at all the horrible animal crises happening in the world and get depressed and become apathetic or angry or mistrustful. But trust me, I've been down that road too. I get it. But what's really great about this program at this project is that people are actually doing something. They're looking at it, and instead of being angry, they're going, no, we can fix this. We have a chance. Maybe some people would say, oh, just let them go. No, we have the responsibility as humans who are here to have stewardship over each other and our planet. So what can we do to make a difference? And it's just so cool to see how these individuals from zoos and aquariums, nonprofits, the national parks in South Africa are all coming together, putting down their egos, trying not to live in a place of scarcity, and saying, what can we do to combine our knowledge and our thoughts and ideas to innovate something to make up for what we've done to this landscape and to these penguins? So they decided to replicate the original natural guano nest and make an artificial nest. And they put devices in the last remaining guano nest. And they even measured the heat and the humidity, the airflow, how much rain got in there. I mean, they really scienced this thing up to make sure it matched the guano nest perfectly. Because they didn't want to waste their time. They wanted to use every moment to figure out how they could match it so that it was as successful as possible. And they failed a lot. They tried 5 different types of artificial nests. One got too rainy, one broke down. Because, of course, with conservation, everybody loves animals and wants to help save them. But then when we ask them for money to help do it, they're like, oh, isn't somebody else going to do that? Like, no, we have to pay for these materials for the nest. So we have to make it affordable and durable in a place that's pretty tough. And the natural disasters in that area, the weather is pretty tough. So we had to consider all that. But eventually, they nailed it, and they have this final nest. It's not like a sexy looking nest at all, okay? It kind of looks, it's just a white igloo looking thing, but it is front to back made by incredible geniuses that work with penguins. They consider animal welfare and, of course, the elements. So it's really cool to see how well it's working.
Right. And there's much more work to be done because the need for more nests is high. And you can go to savingpenguins.org. You can watch the short film, and you can learn more about this project. And Stephanie, we just have like a minute left, and I just wanted to say, can you give people, as we talk about coronavirus and what's happening with that, a little 30-second tip for trying to seek out more information about that from a wildlife conservation and from the work that you do?
Absolutely. Okay, so again, we have animal crises happening around the world, and there's a lot of positive stories like savingpenguins.org can share with you that's positive and successful and gives you hope and you can see it work. Then there's other stories like this where we have wildlife trafficking. That's a major issue all over the planet. You are maybe hearing stories that the coronavirus or COVID-19 was caused from a bat or an echidna. So these animals are being moved around in cages. It's not clean. It's not healthy. Some of them are dead and not clean. They're being exposed to a lot of other animals and humans. And of course, humans are now getting these viruses. Now, you might be seeing that China's banning wildlife trafficking. China's banning these wildlife markets. That makes them sure look really good. But what I encourage you to do is look into credible sources, because they might ban bats, but it doesn't mean they're going to ban every single animal. And why is that important? Because we need all the animals that are especially endangered. We need those animals to be protected for like wildlife or rhino horns and such like that. Like that, just make sure you dig a little bit deeper and just don't settle with the one headline that's hitting the news. There's more to it than that, and we need to keep fighting for protection of those animals and health of humans.
Stephanie Arney, thank you so much. We look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you so much.